I'm Jessica Harris, and this is From Scratch. My guest is Dr. Devi Shetty, a cardiac surgeon and founder of the Narayana Rudayalaya Hospital in Bangalore, India. The hospital provides cardiac care for the poor in India, and Dr. Shetty started the hospital in 2001. Welcome, Dr. Shetty.
Thank you very much, Jessica.
I'm speaking with you over the phone. You are currently in your home in India. Could you explain in your own words what Narayana Rudayalaya Hospital does?
The idea is to bring cardiac surgery to everyone. My country requires 2.5 million heart surgeries a year. And currently, we are all the heart hospitals in the country put together only doing about 90,000 heart surgeries. Jessica, first heart surgery was done 100 years ago. 100 years later, only 8% of the world's population can afford heart operation. Something has to be done. Narayana Rudayalaya Heart Hospital has 1,000 beds, and we have 24 operation theaters. The infrastructure is currently performing about 30 major heart surgeries a day, but that is half of our capacity. And about 30% of our workload is on children coming from 65 countries for heart operation. And about 60% to 70% of the work is adult cardiac surgery.
What is the cost of open heart surgery to somebody who could afford it in India?
Approximately a heart operation on a child who can't afford to pay for the operation would cost about $1,400. The same operation in the U.S. might cost you around $200,000.
What are the primary factors in the business model of low-cost heart surgery? How are you managing to provide low-cost care to India's poor population?
First thing is you have to build a hospital differently. If you build a 100-bed, 200-bed hospital, you cannot reduce the cost. Because in a hospital, bulk of the cost goes for a hard infrastructure like blood bank, laboratories, CT scans, MRIs, PET scans. These are very, very expensive instruments. And what we do is we buy all these advanced machines, but we use them for 24 hours. To run it for 24 hours, you need a large number of outpatients. Large number of outpatients will come, provided you are affordable. So first thing is we build hospitals in about 15 to 25 acres of land. And then we plan to build 5,000 beds, which we build in phases. So if you have large number of beds, then you do more operations. As you do more operations, your results get better. As your results get better, your cost also goes down. And because of these two reasons, more people will come to you.
What were you doing prior to opening the hospital?
I graduated from a medical college called Kasturba Medical College in Manipal, Mangalore in India. Then, like most Indian doctors, I went to England for training in cardiac surgery. Then I came back to Calcutta. I was one of the first few heart surgeons to come back to India to set up cardiac surgical unit. It was in 1989 where cardiac surgery was a mystery to most of my citizens. And when I started my career in Calcutta, if I saw 100 patients per day, not even one person could afford the heart operation. Then I realized that unless I take care of the ability to pay or the paying capacity of the patient, I wouldn't have a practice. So this is how everything started.
You conducted surgery on Mother Teresa. How was that a turning point for you, if at all?
Meeting Mother, as a scientist, I would never accept another human being with flesh and blood like me as God. But I can tell you that Mother was truly God in human form. Being with her, interacting with her, maybe as a heart surgeon treating her, it was a turning point in my career. Her simplicity, her approach towards the realities of life, it made a tremendous impact. And she gave me the fantastic definition of the definition for a pediatric cardiac surgeon. One day I was going for rounds and she was following me, even though she was an inpatient. She looked at the kids I operated. Then she looked at my eyes and she said, "Doc, I know why you're here." I said, why, mother, why am I here? He said, when God made these children with the heart disease, he was probably preoccupied. Then he realized there was a problem and he sent you to fix it. And that is the best definition one could give for a pediatric cardiac surgeon.
How religious were you prior to meeting Mother Teresa?
I was always religious, no doubt, undoubtedly. I was born and brought up in a typical Hindu family down south, where religion is part of our life. But she reinforced my belief in God. She convinced me that the best way to serve God is by serving mankind. So I still have a poster of Mother Teresa in my office, which says, hands which help are better than the lips that pray.
And Narayana Rudayalaya, the name of your hospital, means God's compassionate home.
Essentially, in India, primarily we revolve our life around God and the cosmic forces. We wanted to create something unique, something big, which would make a difference to the society. Hrudaya is heart. Alaya is temple.
We talk about Mother Teresa having this seminal impact on you, but was the train on the tracks to create this hospital even prior to your meeting her?
I think I was in the process of thinking about doing something different, something big. And this interaction with Mother, which lasted for close to 5 years, definitely had an impact on where I wanted to reach. Definitely it had a big impact in terms of looking after the underprivileged are the main concern and the pivotal role it had in building this institution.
My guest is the medical entrepreneur Dr. Devi Shetty. Dr. Shetty is a cardiac surgeon who pioneered low-cost cardiac surgery for India's poor population. He now provides heart care, eye care, orthopedic care, and cancer care to patients in India who cannot afford health care otherwise. Now, the institution or the hospital is in Bangalore, India, and Bangalore is known as sort of the Silicon Valley of India, where there's a lot of technical innovation. Why did you choose to locate the hospital in Bangalore? Was it accidental or was it purposeful?
My wife is from Bangalore. That is one of the main attractions to come back to Bangalore. But, you know, it's a coincidence that Bangalore happens to be the Silicon Valley and so many exciting developments are happening in Bangalore. That definitely helped our objective. But the decision to come back to Bangalore was coming back home.
You mentioned your wife, and it was your in-laws who funded the project. What did your mother or father-in-law do that enabled them to have enough capital to fund the hospital?
My father-in-law was running a very successful construction company, in fact, around 20 years ago. So towards the end of his professional life, he wanted to build a hospital to make a difference to the society. But he had only one condition, a condition that we should never refuse any child who comes to us with a heart disease, irrespective of caste, creed, and nationality. And this is something which he firmly believed, and he insisted that we do it. That's the only condition he had. And we carried on, and this is how the whole thing started.
It seems, Dr. Shetty, that there was this real kind of perfect intersection of Mother Teresa and your medical expertise and your father-in-law all coming together to create this hospital. Do you ever think about that, kind of the stars aligning?
You're right. I strongly believe in that, Jessica. I strongly believe in cosmic forces. Long, long ago, Jessica, I received a donation of 100,000 rupees from one of the army soldiers from Madras. He refused to give his name, and he wrote one note saying that the path you have chosen, the amount of money I am giving is too small, but God has his own mysterious ways of doing the rest. This is exactly what happened in my life. These are all strange coincidences at every level of my life. But I strongly believe that there is somebody up there with the proper design, which is a mystery to me. Mm-hmm. And that's what keeps happening all the time.
So you decide to launch this initiative in Bangalore. How did you get the land to build this vast health campus?
Our country is made up of 32 states. And these states have chief ministers and the government. And these governments are very supportive of hospital projects by people like us. So So we get land virtually free, or we get land for a token amount of money, because government wants this type of large initiatives to come up.
Your hospital is performing roughly 7,000 surgeries a year, and often your doctors are being paid less than doctors elsewhere in the country. How is morale among your doctors?
We have zero attrition rate. No doctor has ever left us. I guess there is not even only one person left in the last 15 years for family reasons. Now, why people stick around, even though their salary is not up to the level what they can get elsewhere, is because as surgeons, if you want to attract them, they need much more than money. They want to do something else. And we always provide what they want, because I am one among them. Every day, children come to us. You know, typically a newborn baby who's very, very blue comes to you. We look at the kid. We tell the mother, baby requires operation. The baby goes to the OT, comes back to the ICU, and we call the mother to see the baby after 4 hours. Mother looks up the baby and say, look, this is not my child. Then we say, that is your child. Then we say, then the mother says, look, he was dark, he was black before you did the operation. Then we tell her that, yeah, he was dark, but now he's pink. Then she will touch the baby, and then she will look at our eyes and say, will he always remain like this? Then we say, yeah, he's going to remain like that. So in a matter of 5 hours, we have transformed the lives of these people. So this is something which you can never buy, irrespective of what money, you know, what you're prepared to trade.
You mentioned before that 30% of the surgeries that you conduct in your hospital is for babies or pediatric care. Why is it so high? Is it larger in India than in other countries?
Jessica, you remember, we produce 28 million babies a year. We produce the largest number of babies in the world. One out of 140 children born anywhere in the world has heart disease. That means technically we produce about 600 to 1,000 children a day with heart disease. And someone has to fix their heart, because these children, if they are operated the moment they are born or in the first few months of their life, you can cure them. So someone has to do it. So we are privileged to be that someone to fix these children's heart.
I'm Jessica Harris, and this is From Scratch. My guest is Dr. Devi Shetty, a medical entrepreneur who's creating a new healthcare economic model in India by providing affordable cardiac care for India's poor population. We'll hear more from Dr. Devi Shetty coming up. I'm Jessica Harris, and this is From Scratch. My guest is the medical entrepreneur Dr. Devi Shetty, a cardiac surgeon who pioneered low-cost cardiac surgery for India's poor population. Over 7,000 surgeries take place in his Nayararana Rudayalaya Hospital, located in Bangalore, India. Dr. Shetty founded the hospital in 2001. Now, you offer a form of insurance called Yashasvini. Can you talk a little bit about the germ of the idea for providing insurance?
The Karnataka Milk Federation, which is a conglomeration of milk producers, they requested me to sponsor one of their low-fat milk, claiming that it's good for the heart. And I agreed to endorse their product, provided the Milk Federation agrees to offer health insurance to the people who sell milk. So they agreed to do that. This is how we started the micro health insurance for the people, farmers who sell milk. And it started with a premium of 11 cents per month. We kept the premium at 11 cents because that is the price of local cigarette called BD they smoke. So the idea was to promote this concept that instead of smoking BD, you buy a health insurance and you will be protected for major illnesses. Today it has grown. This insurance has now spread to other states of the country. Everywhere, 60%, 80% of state population is covered by the health insurance.
So this health insurance that you offer started with this milk cooperative, essentially this group of farmers who, as you say, pay 11 cents a month for insurance. Can you talk a little bit about the rural poor? I mean, your hospital is in Bangalore in a major city, but how are you addressing the needs of the rural poor who can't be transported to the hospital in time if they're having a heart attack, for example?
First thing is, when they develop heart attack, we look after their heart attack from remote areas, from the satellite. We have, you know, Jessica, there are 5 countries in the world which can put satellite on the space, and India is one of those countries. And we have been chosen to be partners with the Indian Space Research Organization to help them to monitor the astronauts when India eventually puts the man on the moon. And we have satellite connection free of cost. So we put up these satellite collection in remote government hospitals and manage heart attack and heart failure sitting in Bangalore or Calcutta. And till date, we have treated over 53,000 heart patients in remote locations.
Can you walk me through, let's say Devi the farmer is having a heart attack or is having some heart trouble. Can you walk me through what happens to him?
Yeah, let's put it this way. A farmer in Hubli, which is about 300 kilometers from Bangalore, if he develops a heart attack, he will go to a general practitioner with chest pain. And most general practitioners down south has an ECG machine, which is linked to the telephone line. And as soon as he does the ECG, it comes to our hospital. And in less than 5 minutes, we give the report to the telephone line. And if it is diagnosed as heart attack, we ask them to go to a coronary care unit in a government hospital or one of our satellite units over there. So the primary care is taken care of. That will save about 95% of the victims of heart attack. And after about 1 month, they will come to Bangalore for further evaluation. And there we do the angiogram and, if required, operation.
You mentioned the Indian Space Research Organization that helps you use satellites for this cardiac care. Whose idea was it to use this Space Research Organization?
The Indian Space Research Organization, they wanted us to help them in monitoring the vitals of astronauts. So we are helping them in their project, and they help us to give the satellite connections free of cost. Right now, sitting in Bangalore, we treat patients in 56 cities of Africa where our satellites are beamed. But the exciting thing, Jessica, I'll tell you, when we do liver transplants on children in Bangalore, do you know who gives the anesthesia for the kids? The anesthesia is given by Children's Hospital of Philadelphia in America.
Wait, so can you explain that to me, how a hospital in Philadelphia is helping you with a liver transplant in Bangalore?
We have extremely skilled surgeons who can do the liver transplant. But our anesthetists are cardiac anesthetists. They do not know the details about managing very sick child who is undergoing a liver transplant, where the operation lasts for 10 hours, 12 hours. So we tied up with Children's Hospital of Philadelphia. The anesthetist there, they realize that since we have the satellite link up, they can sit in the operating room of Philadelphia and manage the anesthesia of the kid who's undergoing operation in Bangalore. Other than touching, they can do everything.
So we talk about, Dr. Shetty, you're creating a health city, but it sounds, with this example of the connection with Philadelphia and also serving African patients, that essentially you're creating a health world.
Trying to, Jessica.
My guest is Dr. Devi Shetty, a cardiac surgeon and founder of the Narayana Rudayalaya Hospital in Bangalore, India. The hospital started off serving cardiac care for India's poor, and now its health centers help patients who have heart problems, eye problems, arthropedic issues, and cancer as well. Could you provide some anecdotes to help us understand what you do on a daily basis?
I start my work very early in the morning, generally, my colleagues start the surgery at 6 o'clock in the morning, and I reach the hospital by around 7:30. Then I have to see at least 70 to 100 patients every day in the outpatients. That's the time patients come, they talk to me about their problems, I console them, try to organize financial assistance. And the, essentially, it's like a meeting area for the patients. I spend about 5 hours with the patients. Then around 12 o'clock, I start the surgery. And I generally concentrate on operations called pulmonary endarterectomies or aneurysms. This is my area of interest. And sometimes I operate on newborn babies. Then as soon as I finish the operation, then maybe half an hour or an hour with my team discussing about various strategies and management issues. Then again, the outpatient. And then it's around 9:30, 10 o'clock. That's the time to go home.
You mentioned you see 70 to 100 patients per day in a span of 5 hours?
Yes. I generally try to spend about 2 to 3 minutes with each patient. Everything has been done by my colleagues. The diagnosis is made, the planning was made, everything is done. But most of these people, unless I see them and unless I touch them, they wouldn't like to go for the operation. Mm. So it is essentially getting to know the family and explain to them that this is what we are planning to do. It is just reassurance that I am there to help them. I try to see at least in 5 minutes about 2 patients. And I have a very big clock hung in front of the wall so that I'm constantly reminded. And I have a very fancy chair made by Herman Miller, which can move from one end of the table to the other end like a Ziffy. So I can turn my chair on and off and, you know, facing one patient, and the second minute I'm facing another patient.
Incidentally, was the Herman Miller chair donated?
That's a good question. It is actually gifted by my son. When he graduated, I guess he earned some money, and he was looking at me struggling with the old Indian chair where the wheels used to get stuck up. You see, what happens when I talk to a patient, the first 2 minutes is about talking to the patient, getting to, you know, convincing them about the treatment and all that. Then they are happy with the treatment. Then they start talking about, you know, I operated on their uncle or a father or a grandfather, how well he is or how grateful I am and all that. That's the time I try to move my chair to the other side of the table. And I need very good wheels. And my son realized that Herman Miller is the best chair.
So really what you're giving to these, you know, 100 patients is emotional consultation versus medical consultation.
Perfect. Yeah, you got it right, Jessica.
Do you worry at all that there's this kind of Walmartization of healthcare? In order for your hospital or for your low-cost health plan to work, you really have to serve many, many, many patients. You know, as you say, you're seeing 100 patients a day, you're doing 2 operations a day. This is obviously far more than the international average. Do you ever worry about the optics of that?
Not really. In the sense, see, there are a lot of changes happening in the country. Now, people, when they come to us, they're a lot more knowledgeable about what we are doing in the heart operation. So they have less questions. They are mentally prepared when they come. And also, my team is growing. So I'm surrounded by physician assistants and well-trained doctors. So essentially, I wouldn't say that as the workload goes up, we lose touch with the patients and the emotional aspect of it. I don't think it will happen. I think it's only getting better as the time passed by.
You talk about being at work around 7 in the morning and going home around 10 at night. What does your wife think about this?
She was finding it. She comes from a very rich family. So, she was initially a bit disappointed. But then, you know, as the family grew, now my children are grown up. My oldest son is an engineer. He's building all the hospitals. And my second son is a doctor, third son is in the medical school. She kind of likes my profession, even though she doesn't admit all along, she cursed my profession. But when my oldest son decided to become an engineer, and one day he declared that, "Daddy, I want to become an engineer." I said, "All right, that's good." Then she just, the hell broke loose. And I said, "What happened?" She said, "Why he doesn't want to become a doctor?" Then I said, "All along you have been cursing my profession, and you're disappointed your son doesn't want to become a doctor." That's the time I realized maybe my wife likes my profession.
My guest is the medical entrepreneur Dr. Devi Shetty. Dr. Shetty is a cardiac surgeon who pioneered low-cost cardiac surgery for India's poor population. He now provides heart care, eye care, orthopedic care, and cancer care to patients in India who cannot afford health care otherwise. Dr. Shetty, your public health initiative has been quite successful against many odds. Could you talk about some of those odds or hurdles that you had to jump over in order to provide low-cost health care to the poor population in India?
When I started my career, the greatest difficulty was convincing people to undergo the operation. The heart surgery was in an infantile stage. Then once I accomplished it, the problem was the affordability.
You have this vision of having 30,000 beds in your health center. What are the hurdles to making that happen? Are they financial? Are they getting people's imaginations to understand what that means? What are those hurdles?
See, the first thing is we strongly believe that India will become the first country in the world to dissociate healthcare from affluence, healthcare from your bank balance. If there is one country in the world which can do it, that is India, because we produce the largest number of doctors, nurses, and medical technicians in the world. Mm-hmm. We have the largest number of US FDA-approved drug manufacturing units outside USA. We have everything required for a fantastic healthcare delivery system. But there is something which can prevent this from happening, that is lack of adequate beds. That is the reason why we want to create these 30,000 beds. Our biggest stumbling block now is arranging funds at our terms to roll out this many beds in a short duration of time without really losing control of the organization. This has been the challenge, because regular financial mechanisms will not be able to help us. So the challenge is raising equity, raising money for all this massive scale expansion.
What is your annual budget?
I guess around $100 to $120 million.
Per year. Yeah. It costs about $200,000 for a patient in the United States to have open heart surgery. And you are building a center or a hospital, a cardiac care center, in the Cayman Islands so that United States citizens and those nearby could benefit from a low-cost surgery. Why does it cost $200,000 in the U.S.?
I think in the U.S., the cost structure is radically different. You see, we work for 6 days in a week, whereas in the U.S., it's only 5 days in a week. Plus, your nurses and doctors generally work for 48 hours in a week, whereas we work virtually double the number of hours. So in U.S. hospitals, traditionally, 65% of the revenue goes for the salaries, while in Indian hospitals, it's about 20%. So essentially, the cost structure, the litigation, the malpractice suits, these are all issues which would jack up the price. And also, there is large insurance companies, you know, with their own, agenda. So essentially, it is a business where there are too many people with too many rigid rules and regulations, and there is absolutely no scope for innovation in the process of delivery. You just cannot innovate.
Hopefully, now that you'll be setting up a center in the Cayman Islands, some competition will cause the U.S. to get their butts in gear.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I don't think I would like to compete with the American hospitals. I just want to show our modest way of doing things.
You mentioned malpractice and lawsuits in the United States. How common are medical malpractice lawsuits in India?
It's extremely, extremely small. Primarily because as surgeons, we spend a lot of time with the patients before operation. We make things very clear to the family. So they don't have unrealistic expectations.
Doctor, you've changed so many people's lives. You've improved so many people's lives by providing low-cost cardiac care. Is there a story or two that come to your mind to demonstrate this?
See, essentially, I am like anybody else in the patient community because as a kid, I am the eighth child of a family with nine children. So when I grew up, my parents were old. My vivid memories about my father is an elderly person who goes in and out of the hospital because of the diabetes complications. So in my life, doctors remained as very important people, and this may be one of the reasons why I decided to become a doctor. So when I interact with the patients, when I see a young lady with a young husband undergoing heart operation with young children, when I operate on them, I think about my life. In case my father had an operation, needed an operation when he was young, and if something happened to him, we would all be on the street. So, you know, these patients' lives are no different than our life. I guess this is one of the greatest motivating factors for all of us to do our best to save their life.
Well, Dr. Shetty, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you, Jessica. It was a great experience talking to you because you are the first Western interviewer who could pronounce the name of my hospital.
My guest has been Dr. Devi Shetty, a cardiac surgeon who pioneered low-cost cardiac surgery for India's poor population. Coming up, we'll meet Bikram Chowdhury, founder of Bikram Yoga. I'm Jessica Harris, and this is From Scratch. I'm Jessica Harris, and this is From Scratch. My guest is Bikram Chowdhury, founder of Bikram Yoga. Bikram Yoga is a series of 26 traditional yoga poses practiced in a hot room about 105 degrees. Bikram started practicing yoga in Calcutta, India, when he was 3 years old. And when he was 11, Bikram became the youngest contestant to win the National India Yoga Competition 3 years in a row. There are now more than 2,000 Bikram studios worldwide, including Mexico, Singapore, Korea, Chile, and Australia. Welcome.
Thank you very much, Jessica.
Please talk to me about your first exposure to yoga at 3 years old. How does a three-year-old become exposed to yoga?
Well, when British left India, 1947, it was like a Hiroshima disaster. No food, no civilization, kind of. And the diseases, people are dying, millions everywhere in cholera, typhoid, pox.
Smallpox.
So in my family, almost everybody has smallpox. So in 48 hours, my older sister and my younger brother died. And my oldest brother, George, has, I had, my older sister had. So after two deaths, my mother was kind of shocked. So she didn't know who else is going to die. So my dad thought the best thing will be to move the whole family to Devghar for health.
After your siblings died of smallpox and your mother was kind of shaken up by the experience.
Exactly.
You needed to find some respite and solace in Devghar.
That's it. So they put everybody covered with the blanket in the train because almost everybody has some kind of disease going out of city. So after 2 months, my brother, sister got better. They used to go to study Hindi language to the master. So he used to teach Hindi language to Bengali children.
Because you didn't speak Hindi at the time.
So I used to go there, sit in the guru's lap for 2 or 3 hours quietly. So he used to hold my feet and hang me upside down called headstand. He used to hold me my whole hand and feet and hang me. It's called bow posture.
This guru who was teaching your brothers Hindi actually taught you yoga.
Yoga. I didn't know it's a yoga.
You didn't know it was called yoga,
no.
But he was teaching you those poses just in a playful manner.
Yes, that's it.
And then you moved to Calcutta and you continued with this yoga.
Exactly.
Okay.
I was five and there's a playground. So I used to go play with the children. And somehow I cross the alley. I see all the big bodybuilder, big muscle, huge gymnasium. And I saw all the kids doing same thing what the masters taught me. So I said, wait a minute, I can do those things much better than you doing it. There's a man who was sitting. He said, hey, you, come here. What's your name? I said, Bikram. Wow, show me more. Now I realize his eyes get big. How can a 5-year-old boy can do all these things? He said, wow, come every day here. I will teach you more.
When you were a child, in addition to having this love towards yoga, you also had a fascination with cars. Where does your fascination with fancy cars stem from?
I don't know how it started, but I used to stand on the main road. Maybe after 2, 3, 4, 5 minutes, one car used to pass. And I used to say, Hillman, Ford, Plymouth, Dodge, DeSoto, Packard, Cadillac, before history. I remember the name of the car.
So your fascination with cars continues today.
All my life.
And you have Bentleys and Rolls
yesterday,
Royces.
Yesterday I bought 6 cars.
6 cars you bought yesterday?
Yesterday.
What kind of cars?
Four Bentleys, 2 Rolls.
Now, you've often made a parallel link between the human body and an automobile.
My guru did same thing.
Explain that.
Well, when you didn't start the car for 3 months, you went to Europe, you came back home. In New York, so cold, car doesn't start. So what do you do? Throw the car in the junkyard and buy another car? No. You recharge the battery and car is fine. So same thing about the human body. Modern medical treatment is something wrong, you get rid of it. You know, you have a little back pain, you operate it. You take the vertebrae out, the disc out. We don't do that. In yoga, you preserve it. You fixed it. You don't get rid of it. So your husband is not good, man. That doesn't mean you divorce him and find another husband. So you fixed him by disciplining him, teaching him. That's called India, Indian culture. So that's come from yoga.
I'm Jessica Harris, and you're listening to From Scratch. My guest is Bikram Chowdhury, the yoga guru who developed and now copyrighted a series of 26 postures practiced in a hot room. There are over 2,000 Bikram yoga studios worldwide. Traditional Hatha yoga, which is the type of yoga that you teach, has 84 postures. And you've broken it down into 26 postures. How come?
You can take care of your whole body if you do 84 postures. So I have done all my life. But I picked up 26 postures to make a package for simple, easy people to maintain good health.
Why a hot room for this yoga? I understand that Indian heat is, you know, that India is maybe above 100 degrees. So were you trying to mimic Indian heat in a closed room?
2 reasons. You are right. I mimic Indian heat temperature. And the second reason is that when I taught yoga in India, teaching American body, European body, first day they are minus 10,000 physically. I never knew human body could be so bad if they are coming from America or in Europe. Big body and bad body. So they cannot stretch. In the cold room, when they're trying to do the posture, instead of improvement, they get more hurt. So I have to keep the window closed so not to fresh air comes.
Even before Western medicine was developed, India turned towards yoga and turned towards Ayurvedic remedies in order to cure the body.
Yes.
Instead of treating each patient or each person individually, oh, this person has a back problem, you do this posture, this person has arthritis, you do that posture, you develop these 26 postures in a certain series that would take care of the whole kit and caboodle.
I'm the first man in history of my country created something that a group of people, each one has different kind of medical disease, disorder, remedy, but a group of people can do together. So it doesn't matter what kind of medical problem you have. Now, you came to my class to fix your bad knee only. You had a car accident, operated 3 times, till you are limping. I'm not going to treat your knee. I don't want to know even your name. I don't want to know even what problem you have. I'll start from your lungs, then the heart, then completely digestive system, you know, pancreas, kidneys, to spleen, liver, intestine, colon, uterus, ovaries, everything I'll take care. Then I'll go to your spinal system. Then I go to nervous system. Then I go to brain cells. But end of the day, I'll fix your knee also.
Now, speaking of knees, you were a weightlifter in India.
Yes, Olympic weightlifter.
As well as a yogi. But all of that weightlifting was put to a halt when somebody dropped a weight on your knee.
My knee.
And your kneecap.
Over 400 pounds.
And your kneecap crumbled?
Not kneecap. The whole leg with the knee was crass, dust. So they want to amputate my leg. I went to every doctor around the globe. And I was not even 18. I was ready to go to Tokyo Olympic to get a gold medal. I want to kill myself.
So how was your knee cured?
6 months yoga every day. 8 hours, 10 hours, 12 hours a day. I should not say I was cured, but I should say I was okay to have a normal life.
In addition to your knee getting healed, you decided then to share this wealth of yoga to students around the world.
My life. Tell me, how many people in this earth been told like me, sorry, nothing we can do anymore? After 5 surgery, 10 surgery, all the medication, all the drugs, go to church. How many people?
Now, how did you start spreading your type of yoga to the United States? One of the first people to benefit from your treatment was President Nixon.
Nixon, yes.
In Hawaii. Tell me that story.
Well, before I taught, a lot of American people, like George Harrison, came to learn from me in 1959. Shirley MacLaine, 1960. So before I came to America in 1970, I taught thousands of, I said a little ago, American people in India, in Japan. Japan, I was a very well-known yoga teacher. All the bases, Tachikawa, Kamsama, Yokosuka, Atsugi, all American bases, all the Vietnam soldier coming injured, I used to treat them, thousands of thousands.
Huh.
So I was very well-known in Japan, all American bases. So that time I cured Prime Minister Tanaka. He has a cerebral thrombosis. He was vegetable. So in 4 months, I make him normal.
This is the Japanese Prime Minister?
Japanese Prime Minister. So he was having a meeting with Nixon in Honolulu. But Nixon, he has phlebitis, thrombosis, left leg, suffering for a long time. Blood clot in the leg. We call traffic jam.
Okay.
So they went. He went to Pearl Harbor Navy Hospital for operation. The doctor said, sorry, it's all clot. We cannot touch it. We cannot open it. He was agony in pain. It was Sunday. My yoga school telephoned. I said, no, not now. I pick up Ambassador of America. Vikram, stay downstairs. With your passport, I'll pick you in 20 minutes. Hang up. Why, when, nothing. From Atsugi base, he put me big C-130, huge plane, to Honolulu in 7 hours. And the 6th floor sitting in front of President Nixon and his wife. So I put bathtub, hot tub with Epsom salt, gave him yoga hydropathic treatment, therapy.
It's yoga in the bathtub.
Bathtub. Or after that, outside.
Okay.
So I did 6 treatments in 3 days. When you're leaving, we're sitting in the airport. He said, let's go to Washington. I said, no, I got to go to Tokyo. So he gave me an envelope and I gave him a tape. So he should practice those postures, 20 minutes. I said, if you maintain this tape, do yoga every day, you will never remember which leg was the bad one. 24 years he lived, never had any problem. And the envelope, you know what? That was my green card.
So Nixon gave you his a green card in exchange for your fixing his blood
clot.
And
built 3 schools for me in Honolulu, San Francisco, in Los Angeles, also from Nixon.
You come to the United States and initially you weren't charging for your classes. You weren't charging people.
The first 2 years I didn't charge any money. I teach free.
How come?
Because India, going to yoga school means you go to a temple to pray. No charge. Still today.
Why did you change your mind?
I didn't change. Shirley MacLaine.
Shirley MacLaine told you to change.
Yes. He said, welcome to America. Welcome to Hollywood. When you're in Rome, you must do what Roman does.
Mm.
If you don't charge, people don't think you really know what you're doing.
Mm.
Then you never draw a respect from people when you don't charge.
Were classes popular? How did the word get out about Bikram Yoga?
Mostly lecture and demonstration. Every weekend, I used to give lecture demonstration, school, college, university, everywhere.
Were there a few people who really changed the popularity of Bikram to some extent?
Not until Shirley MacLaine built the school in Beverly Hills. Once she opened the Beverly Hills school, first show, she put me in Johnny Carson show. Next one, Marv Griffin, Mike Douglas, Dinosaur show. And also, only by invitation, only movie star can come.
I'm Jessica Harris, and you're listening to From Scratch. My guest is Bikram Chaudhary, the yoga guru who developed and copyrighted a series of 26 postures practiced in a hot room. Bikram is known as yoga's bad boy because of his outspoken remarks and unconventional approach to yoga. Bikram's students have included tennis player John McEnroe, LA Lakers basketball player Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, former Indian Prime Minister Indira Gandhi, and Shirley MacLaine. You call your class a torture chamber. And what you often say to your students is, would you prefer 90 minutes of suffering or 90 years of suffering?
That's it.
How come this approach, rather than being a little more gentle on your students?
America taught me, no pain, no gain. No suffering, no pleasure. Jessica, this is the reality, truth of human life. Let's face the truth. Nothing is easy in human life. To gain something, you have to invest something.
Now, you claim that there are no harmful side effects of this yoga. Are there
any? Not me. It's my country. He's been practicing Hatha yoga under a right guru been thousands of years ago. I never heard anybody in my life, anybody harm from yoga.
How about people fainting in the hot class?
Have they it's 30 seconds faint. That's the introduction of self-realization. You conquered the fear of your life when you fainted.
Now, I understand you didn't charge for classes when you initially had your studio, but you've kind of seemed to have gone to the other extreme by copywriting your 26 poses a few years ago.
Right.
Why that shift to copyright your series?
Because lots of people was teaching my yoga, learning from some other school, and a lot of complaint was coming, people getting injuries. So I was getting complaint from all over the country. My student, Anna, she was a personal assistant to Janet Reno. And Janet Reno was the attorney general. So I asked her, what can I do to tell people policing? She said, you have to copyright trademark franchising your yoga so nobody can steal it. That was Department of Justice Department's idea to me.
Now, many people were up in arms about that, including, you know, the Indian government, who says that, you know, yoga has been around for 5,000 years. How can you make it proprietary? How can you kind of commercialize it in this proprietary way?
Sure.
And what is your reaction to them?
Nothing. I just educate them. They're ignorant. They don't know what the hell they're talking about. I'm in America. America taught me how to live American way. So that's why I did it, you know.
And so it's that series of 26.
Yes, 26
it's not the
postures.
Actual poses.
Yes. So English language cannot be copyright public domain, but the book could be. Dore Mi Pa is a public domain. Mm-hmm. But Quincy Jones, when created a melody and put a lyrics, it's become a song. Billie Jean, it's copyright. You cannot do it.
I understand. So there are over 2,000 yoga studios, Bikram yoga studios around the world.
Yes.
And you have not franchised them or charged a franchise fee at all. When a teacher takes training at your studio, they then have the ability to go off and start their own studio, Bikram Yoga Studio.
Yes.
But you don't charge them for this
I
franchise. What you do charge them for is the 2 months of teacher training, which is about $10,500.
Including accommodation.
Have you thought about charging a franchise fee?
Yes, because recently, to protect those 2,000 schools is a huge lawyer bills.
This might sound Pollyanna-ish, but I think that a lot of the strife and problems in the world is due to pent-up energy and people not liking themselves.
Yes.
How would you respond to that? Do you think if we put Bikram Yoga Studios in the Middle East, for example, that people would be
anywhere
more peaceful?
In the world. Middle East, I have school also. I have a most successful school in Kuwait and in Dubai. And from Pentagon selected me as a Peace Corps leader to go all Islamic country from America to Pakistan and teach them self-realization, to fall in love with themselves instead of, you know, spitting in the sky and coming back to your own face. I don't know anybody in the world who love himself like me. When you take care of yourself, then you can create same relation with somebody else.
How often do you practice Bikram yoga?
3 times a week, Monday, Wednesday, Friday, advanced class. I do 84 postures.
How are your eating habits?
I eat very little once a day, late night, like at 10:30, 11, 12 o'clock, this much like a baby. But only 4 things I eat out of 4, 1, either meat or fish or egg or chicken.
And how about tea or coffee or alcohol?
I never drink tea, coffee in my life, one drop in my life. I never touch one drop of beer or champagne or any liquors in my life, never touch cigarette. You will never meet another cleanest living human being in the earth in 20th century or 21st century like me, I guarantee you.
And you also claim that your yoga keeps people looking young. Why is that?
Are you kidding?
Why
is that? Simple. Keep the body full of vitality. You have excess of energy. You eat less and you sleep less. And you have the same body. Never get sick. Everything under control. You are bulletproof, waterproof, windproof, fireproof, emotionproof, stressproof, strainproof, sexproof, emotionproof. Even at old age, yogi never become old.
Look at you.
Look at me.
How old are you?
62 running.
Wow, you look 42.
For me, it's getting harder and harder and harder because I missed a lot of classes. 8 months I'm in the air. I traveled so much.
Why are you traveling so much?
Oh my God, because yoga is so big around the world. Everybody trying to buy my name around the globe, open the school. I don't like this kind of life too much. I have to support all these teachers, all the schools. I take care of millions and millions of people around the globe. And but they trust me.
But don't lose sight of what created all of this.
I know.
Well, namaste.
Namaste. And thank you so much for inviting me.
My guest has been Bikram Chowdhury, the founder of Bikram Yoga. I'm Jessica Harris, and this is From Scratch.